Episode 174 von Win Today Hockey O'Clock. Greg Holst, Legende. Anything to let listeners know while they're heading into a longer than usual off-season here on the podcast too?
No, let me just touch on the 4 years. I'm just going to have one line for the last 4 years. You, me, the whole team shared together. Now, this could put a tear in my eye, so I'm going to have to be rough and tough for another 10 seconds here. Thank you for the memories.
Win today, hockey. O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird's jetzt richtig hitzig. Und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur der Ball.
Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
One last time this year on Win Today Hockey O'Clock. We're going to talk about the Win Today Ice Hockey League. We're going to talk about the National Hockey League. We're going to talk about four tremendous years at Pulse 24. No one better suited to do so than the guy who's now on Win Today Hockey O'Clock line. It's, of course, player legend, coaching legend, Greg Holst. Coach, as always, so happy that you're jumping onto the pod.
Well, Martin, thank you very much for inviting me. And I think back 4 years ago to that phone call. I was in Canada. It seems like last week.
We'll get to the phone call in a bit. Then I have to preface this a little bit because this space normally is reserved to the championship winning head coach. But this year is a little different. First of all, hats off to the Red Bulls and hats off to Oliver David. Tremendous job, especially in game 7, and all in all, a well-deserved championship. Hopefully, I'll be getting Oliver David onto this program in quite some time, or maybe early next year. But I thought, just because of the fact that we're looking back on 4 years of doing TV together, and because of the fact that we have to hit a couple of the storylines too, it'd just be neat to have you on. So that's why there will be no championship winning head coach interview this season, which is only going to last for two more weeks here in Win Today Hockey O'Clock. But again, hopefully Coach David will jump onto the show early next season. We had the longest playoffs in league history. We had 24 consecutive game days. 3 in the pre-playoffs, 7 in the quarter, 7 in the semis, 7 in the finals. As far back as you can remember, was this the greatest playoffs we had?
Well, it definitely was one of them, but it is the best time of year for the players, the coaches, the fans, the reporters, and of course, us guys who do TV. You can't eliminate last year. I know we had more games last year, but if you think back to last year, how exciting the finals was, right down to the last second. It was fantastic. So we did have more games this year, but we have had other pretty exciting playoff runs.
When I traveled back from Klagenfurt, I kind of felt empty, as I always do when you finish a long playoff run with traveling to places every other day, doing commentary, doing your preps and everything. How did you feel? How have you digested game 7 so far?
Well, game 7 was definitely a little bit of a surprise. But I honestly feel Salzburg, who was highly underrated 3 months ago, as we talked about, they got better as the series went along. And if you think about game 6, was for me was absolutely so exciting, being at ice level. They were really skating well. I know Cartier won the game, but they had 52 shots. And I feel like they brought that mindset and that speed into the last game. And Cartier just seemed to be a step behind, because if you look at the first 3 goals, Those are three defensive mistakes from Clankford that normally they would not make. Is it body fatigue? Is it mental fatigue? Salzburg was just a little bit sharper, and they deserved to win that last game.
We see it in the National Hockey League all the time. Tampa had to pay its dues. The Avalanche had to take a couple of gut punches until they finally got over the hump. Now Klagenfurt had to take one to the gut. What kind of conclusions can you draw? And I know it's still early, but with the finals just fresh in our memories, what kind of takeaways should Klagenfurt draw from this year? How can Salzburg and the championship eventually goes through Salzburg again, of course. How can they be toppled?
Well, you see Boston Bruins last year, record points in the season, and then they lose the first round of the playoffs. A couple of years ago, Boston sneaks into playoffs, when St. Louis Blues NHL sneak in on the last day. Florida Panthers last year just slip into the playoffs or end up in the finals. So first place is, as beautiful as it may sound, it's not necessary. It's better to build up your team, go through adversity, find your way. And I'm going to tell you, having 9 days off and 10 days off in between playoff rounds, I don't like starting the playoffs for all the six top teams. They have to wait 8 or 9 days to have a game. I don't like it because it's beneficial to the teams that are in the playdown. So are they going to try to fix a new system? I can't answer that. Hard on Klagenfurt to have those long breaks. And if you look at this series, Cartier did start pretty damn good. They were the better team in a couple games early in the series that they lost. Just like in game six that they won, Salzburg was the better team. But the true turning point was the game when Salzburg scored with 4.8 seconds left and won in overtime. That was tough mentally, physically, just a tough way to lose a hockey game. Did they ever recover 100% from that? I don't think they did. But at the end of the day, you got to take your hats off to Salzburg because they got better as the series went on.
Couldn't have put it better, and that's why I always like to bring you on for your expertise. But as you talked about the system and how seeding is done and with the pre-playoffs and the longish kind of delays, what would you rather see fixed? How the seeding works or the elimination of 3-3 overtime after in non-elimination games after overtime period number one?
Well, 3-3 in overtime in the playoffs, it's my opinion. It's just not the way it should be because it's not the true game. You battle all year. You battle through the first overtime. If it gets a little late and the players play 2 days later, even if it's an early game, it's the same for both teams. You find a way, you change, you go shorter shifts. Maybe you have a deep catter, whatever. I watched the DEL yesterday, Berlin, Bremerhaven. End of the second overtime was fantastic. It's 5-on-5. If it was 3-on-3, it would have been over, and it's not the same intensity because it can't be. There's too much room, 3-on-3, for the intensity what overtime should be. As far as the seeding goes, why do they do it? Do they do it to have two extra teams have a chance because of fans, finances? I can't answer that exactly. I know the NHL, Crosby, and the top players love the system first again, eighth. That's what they would love to see, not first, fourth in the divisions. Because in the first round this year, for example, there's going to be some teams that could possibly win the cup gone in the first round.
As far as the intel goes that we gathered, the 3-on-3 overtime appears to be here to stay. But what I'd love to see is a survey amongst the players if they want to have it or if they elect to get it ousted. But that's a matter for another day. What we'll do is talk about storylines for next year. And the person that you are and speaks obviously volumes. I told you in preparation of this conversation to prepare the top three storylines for next year. What you did is come up with the top 10 storylines, of course, for next year in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League. And I'll read them out loud and you'll just tell listeners and me what you thought when jotting that one down. And first and foremost, the most important storyline and of course the one everybody's going to talk about is a four-peat. Four consecutive championships. If we just look at the National Hockey League, we have to go back to the late 70s and early 80s to the New York Islanders dynasty to see a team win four cups in a row. I mean, being the hunted once and defending a championship is already an accomplishment. Salzburg did it twice. Three times, not unprecedented in this country. The great Fayou did it in the mid-90s. But holy moly, would that be an accomplishment? For Pete, you think it can be done?
Well, their team is going to be similar. They're going to lose a player or two, but they will. They're deep. What's going to happen next year? If you think Raffel, Schneider, Tolvanen, Robertson, these players are going to be satisfied, you better think again. Because the mistake that was made this year, Martin, we talked about this on air, on TV, in podcast, in our personal talks, 3 months ago, nobody was talking about Salzburg. They had tough times. They got a new coach. They miss McIlvain. They're up and down. They're in trouble. They will not be underestimated next year like they were this year. This fit in perfect what those guys wanted. All of a sudden, they snuck in there. They got better at the end of the finals. They will not be underestimated next year.
Your number two topic for next year, and I quote you literally on this, Fehervar again will be strong, if not stronger, going into the new arena. What makes you confident that Fehervar will again be amongst the top teams of the league?
Well, because they are very good every year, but I believe moving into this big, new, beautiful arena, the city, the fans are going to be mega excited. So management, they are going to make sure that the team is as good as it was last year, if not better. So I expect them to be a cup contender next season.
We're staying with an international team, and according to you, Ljubljana will be a team to watch because there is a new Canadian investor, apparently highly motivated to keep them not only competitive, to make them even more competitive than they already were. I think, if I remember the name correctly, he's called Alexandre Lefebvre. And with a new investor, this could always go both ways. On the one hand, he could be the one making smart decisions and everything. On the other hand, he could, and I don't know him at all, and I haven't seen him yet, heard of him yet, but if things go downhill with all the investments made, that of course could put a lot of pressure not only on the players but coaches, infrastructure, etc. And then again, I think of an interview with Andreas Schwab, manager or amongst the managing team from Villa. He said, there's not going to be a lot of hockey played in future years without a big donor or big investor. So great things obviously in store for Ljubljana, but where do you stand on that fine line of it being great that someone takes his money and puts it into a hockey organization, and then again the huge amounts of pressure that come with it?
Well, how good was Ljubljana last year? I mean, they weren't really that far off. They got a big, solid, tough team. It's a great hockey city. Slovenia is a great hockey country. Having the extra money, you could get 3-4 players on top of what they had, good players. Example, Sabolic. Rumor has it he is going back there. I don't know if he signed. Tomisevic, these kind of players. They're going to build, their local players are dedicated. They're a tight team. They're going to get some solid imports. Having the money gives you the security. It's up now to the coaches and the management to organize the team properly. Not the guy with the money. It's the guy who he hires who are in place to put the team together. I think Ljubljana next year will be a step up from this season.
We're staying with the quote-unquote topic, big money, because apparently that's what's being handed out in Graz. And the other day or other week, I had Harry Lange here on the podcast, and he told about the new team president, Herbert Jerich, being incredibly committed to the city, to the team, to the organization. So great things hopefully happening in Graz, because it's a great sports city, and the Mozamedica Graz 99ers haven't had success and sustained success in a very long time. From the outside looking in, a lot of the moves look interesting. I really hope that Harry Lange and Philip Pinter, an Austrian organizational core, will find success. But how difficult you think it's going to be to have a team that's basically entirely not composed from scratch, but it's being put together as we speak? And from the outside looking in, again, it seems like a winter day ice hockey league all-star team. How difficult do you think it'll be to shape a cohesive unit out of those stars, as it seems?
Well, first of all, it's important that Graz has a good team for the league. That's number one. Philip Pinter did an excellent job here the last 5 years, building up the Knockworks, the kids program in Fjellach. Now he has this big opportunity, which he has to jump on, which he has taken on. I love the fact, Harry Lange, I coached him U18, U20. Great kid, was a real tough, hardworking hockey player. Good to see an Austrian coach in that position. Okay, that's where we start. You're putting a lot of good hockey players together. It doesn't take long. That's why you have training camp, 4 or 5 weeks of training camp. There's no excuse for that team not to be good. Okay, so what they need now, goaltending, who's going to be in nets? Very important they get a very strong goaltending duel. The team's going to have good players. They can gel quickly. It should not be a problem. The only problem that they're going to have is that there's a whole bunch of other teams that are going to be really good too. And that's what makes it exciting.
Your storyline number 5 for the upcoming year in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League, can and how will KLC reload their team with some of the players leaving? Now, there is a core. There's Rafael Herburger. There's Jan Murschak. There's Finn van E. There's Luka Gombots, among some of the contracts that will run through next year and in some cases even the year after that. On defense, David Meyer, Steven Strong, and Clemens Unterweger form a nice little core of three. But outside of that, a lot of contracts are up. Who do you think will not be back in a Klagenfurt jersey? And what types of players you think could help Klagenfurt be successful in the upcoming year?
Well, I don't think it's fair for me to answer which players are not going to come back. I think what they're going to do is they're going to look at the age of the players, how successful they were this year, how they were down the stretch in the playoffs up to the last game. And then they're going to decide, do we go a little bit younger, a little bit quicker? What's the direction we want to go? How do you, it's very hard to replace a Houghton. So what do we do? Rumor has it, Peters, his name's popping around, the guy from Innsbruck, is going here, going there, who knows? How do you replace Genau, who had a very good year? So you have some really good Austrian players that are leaving. So yes, you do have some young guys coming up. Are they as talented as Houghton? No, they are not. Do you possibly get an extra import on top of what they had this year, a good one, to fill Houghton's shoes? These are the questions they have to answer, because they know it's not going to run like it did this year. It's just not going to happen. Slow start, fantastic job, Fury, Fisher, hats off to them, great job. Next year, every team is going to be more prepared for these guys. It's going to be a real top battle. They're going to be a top team next year, but they have to rebuild their team a little bit. As you mentioned, they have certain players in place, but they're going to have to replace the Houghtons, the Genaus, possibly a little bit younger, a little bit more speed with the imports.
Storyline to watch, number six. You said Bolts and Pusata will both again be strong. Bolzano took Salzburg to a game seven in the semis. Pusatal got to the semis for the very first time. So two top four finishes. What makes you confident that they'll be able to contend next year again?
Well, because Bolzano always does. That's number one with those guys. Big, beautiful rink. Down the stretch, they always seem to find a way. Is Hanna going to coach? Who's going to coach them? They always seem to put a solid... It's a great hockey town. It's a big, solid hockey rink. They're going to be good, as always. Pustertal has stepped up. They got a taste of the playoffs. They had the extra two or three home games this year. They have more money in the bank. They're going to put a team as good, if not a touch better, on paper next year, on the ice next year. They're going to be good. They're going to be fast. They're going to load up on imports. They're going to be an exciting team to watch. And of course, they got a fantastic arena.
Your storyline number seven, one of my top three storylines, because it's so interesting and so much will depend on it. You said, and you phrased the question, can Villach get the coach they want and how will they build their team? What do you think? What kind of coach does Villach need?
Well, you know, they've gone through the different coaches. Rob Dam did a good job for a long time. Rodney came in. I understand they wanted a little bit more experience. Okay. So, well, you need a player's coach who can work with the imports, the top players, and develop young players and get that mix. How can we gel the young players with the import players, which they are going to have to sign once they get a coach? How do you build that team to be the family it has to be in Villach, which can be a fantastic hockey city, as we know? I saw one article, Dave Barr had an interview. I don't know if it's true. I did read that. For example, he would be a fantastic coach for Villach or someone like him. It's not easy. There's hundreds of names, Martin. It's not easy to pick the right guy, but it's essential, not only for Villach, but for Innsbruck and all the other teams that are looking for new coaches.
And if you just think back of what Dave Barr did in Vienna and that they maybe overachieved a little during his tenure, that'd be an enticing fit if it indeed happens. But I read the story that they're having literally dozens of potential coaches on their list, and I'm really curious to eventually find out about their process and who'll get the job in Villach. Same goes obviously for Vienna, albeit there are going to be a lot more important decisions made on other levels of the organization. One very good decision already being made or haven't been made, that Christian Dolezal will remain with the team as sports director. Couldn't happen to a more knowledgeable and better guy. Obviously, as Peter Kalik, writer from the newspaper Courier, told us during the last regular season game day, that it's now about putting together a budget and investors and coming up with a new structure, as Franz Kalla won't be on active duty as manager anymore, which is an interesting development. Two, how confident do you feel that Vienna will field a competitive squad next year? Because their long and successful postseason history, or the consecutive postseasons ended this year, just never felt right from the get-go. Difficult situation for Christian Dolezal and his staff to take over the team after Mark Habscheid didn't bring the success that some people envision, imports not being up to the standard that Vienna set for many, many years. So to get back to the question, what will Vienna look like in 24-25?
Well, it's definitely not a trick question, because the number one thing is money. It's all about money. What kind of sponsors are they going to do? They have enough money to put a competitive team on the ice? Let me mention something about Dolezal. He did a fantastic job this year. He came up through the program, was coached in the second league. He's done it all. He took over the team. They were competitive in a lot of games, but people thought they wouldn't be. So great job that he did. And it's really good to see him jump into the GM role, if you say, because he's got a good hockey mind. He was a good hockey player. He's Vienna through and through. It comes down to budget. Can they put a competitive team on the ice? But I'll tell you something else. There's so many. Do you have the scouting system that can bring in young, hungry players? You've got the East Coast League. You've got kids coming out of Canadian university, American universities, that would come over here for 30,000 euros. I know that for a fact. We've seen it. Can they find these players, as Falkirk has done, as Innsbruck has done over the years, as even some of the young players that Felak brought in, that Matnins, these guys? You can find these players that are not overly expensive and add on some young, talented Vienna players. You make it a young, fast, hungry team, but get some real good goaltending to go with it. That is their challenge.
Vienna, your number 8 storyline, moving on to number 9. And the goaltending for that team is already set, with Alex Caffi and David Madlena already having signed contract extensions for the Pioneers. But you said, and you asked, can the Pioneers build off of a solid year number 2? How dangerous is that year number 3, especially after everything the Pioneers have achieved already in year number 2?
It's called expectations. It's expectations. So now the people, full house down the stretch, the people are excited about hockey. You got to come out of the gate flying. Can they re-sign the good players they had that year? Is it financially possible? They have some other issues they have to finally clear up and get out of the way so this team can build. They ended on a fantastic note. So that means they've got a great coaching staff. You have to put the same kind of team, if not a touch better, on the ice next year, because expectations are going to be sky high.
And of course, the talent drain already there. Steven Aury signing with a team in the Swiss League, the second level in Switzerland. So you only have to replace the league MVP, your top scorer, 30 goal scorer. So it's going to be difficult, but incredibly interesting how the Pioneers are going to fare. And with topic storyline number 10, we're going to remain in the west of the league, Innsbruck. Currently without a head coach, but some smart signings. Remember we talked about the fact that some teams should take a long, hard look at maybe Klagenfurt's Alps Hockey League team that will be that's going to fold, or maybe at Salzburg's team, players being stuck between the Alps Hockey League team and just not being able to crack the Wittede Ice Hockey League team's roster. And Innsbruck already bringing in Steffler and to pair him with his brother. I think they signed Stefan Klasik yesterday. So a couple of smart and very promising signings. But of course, everything starts with the head coach. Hasn't been announced yet. What kind of coach does Innsbruck need?
Well, they're going to have, they all need the same thing, right? Everybody needs a player's coach, a tough coach. You can't be soft. You got to be honest with the players. And that's not going to change. Every team needs a really good coach. But they've done a fantastic job over the years. It seems that every year, and I know Max Steinacker is behind this, and probably the coach will have to help. Their scouting system is obviously freaking good, because every year they have four or five or six new import players that are freaking good, and they seem to fit into the budget. They seem to get it done. So number one is, who's going to coach? Now they go after their import players. I'm not sure who signed there or not. A couple players have left, gone to Graz. We know that. Get a coach. They've obviously got a good scouting system. So, but can they keep this going? The league, I honestly feel the league is going to be more competitive than it has ever been. And it's not going to be easy for these teams, putting these teams together.
I think this will cap the Wintertoy Ice Hockey League season 23-24. Obviously, a great year on the horizon. The quality will only be getting better. Obviously, we're not sure what our future will hold, but let's just say the new TV contracts get announced the next couple of days and maybe weeks. If you were to get a call to remain a pundit and analyst, what would you do?
That is such a funny question. Here's what I would say. Who are they? What's the team look like? What's the contract look like? I'd say those three are probably pretty important, right? Because I know you're gonna throw some other questions at me about our 4 years here, so you may as well start right now.
I will definitely do. You're a diplomat as always when it really comes to it. But looking back on those 4 years, and you already elaborated and alluded to the fateful phone call in July of 2020, and we talked about it at length during your series for your 70th birthday, where we dissected your life and created seven parts. One part featuring a decade of your life. But as those 4 years have gone by so fast, what's the one memory that you'll take to the grave in another 70 years, obviously?
I would say it's the team and the relationships and the friendships, even though it was a job, that we built, and the fun that we had because of the team chemistry we had and the personal relationships. That is definitely number one on the list. That's why we did it, why we do this job, because so if the team's not tight and doesn't have humor, it doesn't work. So definitely the friendships and the relationships I have had over the last 4 years, very, very special.
I have to agree 100%. That was also kind of our message when we did sign off after Finals Game 7 on Pulse 24. I always cherish the National Hockey League broadcast that we did, and especially the beers in a rocking chair in front of the hotel early morning, people going to work, and we who obviously can't work a normal job, having a cold one at 6 in the morning in Vienna. That was tremendous.
Well, Martin, that's on my list, but you asked me the question of the whole 4 years, right? But I can honestly tell you, as exciting, as fun as some of the win-today league was, the local league, the exciting games, the NHL for me, and I know for you, and I know Chris enjoyed it too when he took your spot a couple times, that added such a fantastic element to what we were doing. Because I look forward, getting on the train, we're going through COVID times. There's two people on the train. One time the conductors brought me up the front. I shouldn't be saying this because they're not supposed to do it. I'm actually kind of driving the train with them. The friendships I made on the train, the Novotel where we had, there was nobody in the hotel, you, me, and the staff. And the fun we had doing those games, you bring it out, that little net. And you'd ask me about a backhand or some type of shot. And you put the goalie glove on. Well, Christ, it was bigger than the net. So how the hell you want me to score? And then the time I had a laugh, I still laughed. When you asked me about a stick lift, how do you steal a puck? And so I kind of caught you off guard, but I show you, you got to be quick, you got to be fast. Bang, and I lifted your stick. I think your shoulder damn near popped out. So all these fun moments we had. I remember the swing. I remember the podcast. Montreal Canadiens in the finals. We're having a big golden beer at 6 a.m. We called it the golden ale after work. We took a video. We sent it to my dad. And my dad had the best line. He said, oh, that's like your old lifestyle. It hasn't changed. So thank you for those memories. You know what, Martin? After the last game 7 in Clankford, next day I went for about a 75-minute, 90-minute walk. And I swear, I had a smile on my face the whole way, thinking about all the stuff that we are talking about now. Pustertal, the rink, the people, the NHL stuff. All the stuff, the great talks we had. I thought about all the great moments, and you know what? It put a big smile on my face. And I'm very thankful that you phoned me in Kelowna, British Columbia, getting the number from Cindy, who, even though we weren't together at the time, you got the number from Cindy, which is a fun little story in itself. Then we had our little Zoom call and our little probe or whatever you want to call it. You had an
audition, yeah.
You had my audition, and I did pre-scout the period. And you, so I was smart. I know it's like negotiations, right? Thank you for that phone call. I honestly cannot believe that phone call was 4 years ago.
Truly is.
And you know what, Mark? Sorry to interrupt. I just went over and checked some of my stats today. I believe I did 102 games.
Wow. Okay. I never went through the number that I did, but holy.
Well, you did definitely more, but the NHL obviously added on to a lot of that for that first year and a half, which was so exciting, so much fun, and great memories.
100% agreed. I sat on a train on Saturday and thought back on a lot of things too. And then, of course, you and me, we start texting back and forth. And then at one point, of course, I cracked. Didn't do it on air this time around. But yeah, just thinking back of all the great memories, relationships, people that you met along the way, the great Pulse team. We mentioned a couple other names on air. It's just incredible. But to round this one out, let's talk a little.
Well, Martin, can I touch on something you just said there? You know,
go ahead.
The reason, even when I coached in Phila after we won the championship, I went for a walk the next day. I was freaking crying. Like, I couldn't stop. Because to win is so hard, and to finally win. And when I see people successful or win things, and we have tears in our eyes, we're these rough and tough hockey players and tough guys. But the passion and the love of the game brings out the emotion in you. And you cannot be embarrassed or think it's unmanly to be able to have tears of emotion. That's the passion, the love of life, and the love of hockey for the game that we love so much. So it's never a weakness when people can show their feelings. I think it's a strength.
Again, as someone who cried on national television, I guess I can relate to that. But I wanted to turn the page one last time on this podcast for our podcast season and talk a little National Hockey League. Tremendous playoffs in store. Already seen some great games, even though it's basically just been a handful that have been played. From the 8 series that will happen over the course of the next 2 weeks, which one's the one you're most interested in?
I watched it yesterday. It was freaking intense. I think halfway through the second period, the hits were 38-37. Tampa, Florida. Fans going bananas. But Martin, there's so many other good series. It's hard to pick one. Vegas, Dallas, Vancouver won last night. It's going to be tough. Winnipeg, Colorado, 15,000 dressed in white, 30,000 outside dressed in white. Watch it on the screens. The NHL is such a fantastic product. I mean, can the New York Rangers win the Stanley Cup? Yes, they can. Can Dallas win the Stanley Cup? Yes, they can. Can Vegas? Can Florida? Can Carolina? How do you pick a winner this year? Which team gets on a run? Which goalie gets hot? Boy, this is exciting. It's as exciting as it's ever been.
I'm very much looking forward to the Vegas-Dallas series because obviously to get through the conferences and go through the Stanley Cup final, you got to beat all of them anyways. And why not start with the reigning champion with the Vegas Golden Knights and of course, on Dallas. On one hand, a young and skilled team. On the other hand, probably the best old guy without a cup, as they like to say, with Joe Pavelski. Who would you rather see lift a cup? Pavelski or Freddie Anderson, who was not good enough in Toronto, whom they'd very likely take back in a heartbeat, who had those blood clot issues, who's now on a tier, who already led him to a game one victory in their series against the Islanders. Who would you rather see if you were only able to pick one?
Well, I would probably have to. I mean, it's a tough question, as you know, right?
I know it's mean, but answers.
I would have to go with Pavelski because the reason is he's not even a real fast skater. He's not a really big guy. He's practiced thousands of hours tipping pucks in, finding ways to be successful. He knows where to go. He knows where to get there. He was one of their top scorers again. In a couple of years, he's going to be 40 years old. How can you not hope for a player like that? I took Bork 22 years, Raymond Bork, to get his Stanley Cup, and then he could retire in peace. How freaking difficult is it?
I read a great line the other day that the first round matchups are probably the best, because everybody's still relatively healthy. And we saw it, and we talked about it during our finals that no one on the ice is at 100%. It's just about trying to sustain your effort as best as possible through the rounds, but obviously there's a decline now. I thought to myself after leaving Klagenfurt, holy shit, in a National Hockey League, they'd have to go another round to eventually get to the championship. And we saw it last year with a battered Florida team that just couldn't come
they
back anymore from everything.
Yeah.
So,
but Mark,
that just shows to me how hard it is to win this trophy.
I don't forget they've had 82 league games too, and a possible 28 on top of that. And let's not forget about Edmonton here. Connor McDavid, Draisaitl, a Canadian team. Toronto, they've got their hands full. They're going to have to play some good defense, get some good goaltending. How exciting would it be, a Vancouver, a Edmonton, a Toronto, a Canadian team, to get to the semis, maybe get to the finals? Last cup in Canada was in
Montreal.
1993. That is 31 years ago. As crazy a country is about hockey. They are hockey freaking crazy. I haven't won a Stanley Cup in 31 years.
Two more things until we sign off. One player indeed played 83 regular season games this year, Sean Monahan. So there's that. And
that's a great stat, Martin, but you are the stat man.
Well, sometimes I do stumble upon some interesting facts, and for whatever reason, they tend to remain with me. The other one, I saw a photo of a Vancouver pub the other day, and they had a big billboard outside of the pub, and it said, come and watch all four Leafs playoffs games. That's a shenanigans that you have to pull during the playoffs. This is why is the greatest time, and I enjoyed it so much. We're finishing our season in the Austrian, in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League, and then it's the best league with two straight months of great games.
Well, is that our final word?
No, the final word has always belongs to you. Anything to let listeners know while they're heading into a longer than usual off season here on the podcast too?
No, let me just touch on the 4 years. I'm just going to have one line for the last 4 years. You, me, the whole team shared together. Now, this could put a tear in my eye, so I'm going to have to be rough and tough for another 10 seconds here. Thank you for the memories.
Win today, hockey.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Die Fans stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move, another nice move. Oh, he scored! Oh!